When he reached New York, he flew a circle over it, stopping several times so that his little TV camera could send back steady, vibration-free images. The panorama of buildings, towers, industrial plants, power stations, or whatever they were, was fascinating, but essentially meaningless. No matter how long he stared at its complexity, he was unlikely to learn anything. The camera would record far more details than he could possibly assimilate. And one day, perhaps years hence, some student might find in them the key to Rama's secrets. After leaving New York, he crossed the other half of the sea in only 15 minutes. Though he was not aware of it, he had been flying fast over water. But as soon as he reached the south coast, he unconsciously relaxed, and his speed dropped by several kilometers an hour. He might be in wholly alien territory, but at least he was over land. As soon as he had crossed the great cliff that formed the sea's southern limit, he panned the TV camera completely round the circle of the world.
"Beautiful," said Hub Control. "This will keep the mapmakers happy. How are you feeling?"
"I'm fine. Just a little fatigue, but no more than I expected. How far do you make me from the pole?"
15.6 kilometers.
"Tell me when I'm at 10. I'll take a rest then, and make sure I don't get low again. I'll start climbing when I've 5 to go."
20 minutes later, the world was closing in upon him. He had come to the end of the cylindrical section and was entering the southern dome. He had studied it for hours through his telescopes at the other end of Rama and had learned its geography by heart. Even so, that had not fully prepared him for the spectacle all around him. In almost every way, the southern and northern ends of Rama differed completely. Here was no triad of stairways, no series of narrow concentric plateau, no sweeping curve from hub to plain. Instead, there was an immense central spike, more than 5 kilometers long, extending along the axis. 6 smaller ones, half this size, were equally spaced around it. The whole assembly looked like a group of remarkably symmetrical stalactites hanging from the roof of a cave, or, inverting the point of view, the spires of some Cambodian temple set at the bottom of a crater. Linking these slender, tapering towers and curving down from them to merge eventually in the cylindrical plane were flying buttresses that looked massive enough to bear the weight of a world. And this, perhaps, was their function. If they were indeed the elements of some exotic drive units, as some had suggested. Lieutenant Pack approached the central spike cautiously, stopped pedaling while he was still 100 meters away, and let Dragonfly drift to rest. He checked the radiation level and found only Rama's very low background. There might be forces at work here which no human instruments could detect, but that was another unavoidable risk.
"What can you see?" Hub Control asked anxiously.
"Just Big Horn. It's absolutely smooth. No markings. And the point's so sharp you could use it as a needle. I'm almost scared to go near it."
He was only half joking. It seemed incredible that so massive an object should taper to such a geometrically perfect point. Jimmy had seen collections of insects impaled upon pins, and he had no desire for his own dragonfly to meet a similar fate. He pedaled slowly forward until the spike had flared out to several meters in diameter, then stopped again. Opening a small container, he rather gingerly extracted a sphere about as big as a baseball and tossed it towards the spike. As it drifted away, it played out a barely visible thread. The sticky bomb hit the smoothly curving surface and did not rebound. Jimmy gave the thread an experimental twitch, then a harder tug. Like a fisherman hauling in his catch, he slowly wound Dragonfly across to the tip of the appropriately christened Big Horn until he was able to put out his hand and make contact with it.